Welcome to episode 25 of the Lumber School podcast. Julian Crutchlow is our guest today. In his own modest words, Julian considers himself a good club runner. He's hung around and still loves the club scene, particularly cross country. Now we'll come on to that later on. Julian has a decent set of PBs, 401 for 1500, 830 approximately for 3K, a 1450-ish for 5K, 2405 for 5 miles, 2846 for 6 miles, 30 minutes, 30 seconds for 10K, 50 minutes for 10 miles, 66 for the half marathon, and 2 hours 27 for the marathon. And as often is the case, times don't always tell the full story. And Julian's story is really interesting because he's still a very strong runner in his 60s. Welcome, Julian Crutchlow. Welcome to the show. How are you, and how is life on the south coast of England? Is it the south?
Hello, Damien. Yeah, loving it here. Moved down here 3 years ago, and actually, on the day, 3 years to the day, moved down here.
Look at that.
And loving it. I'm in semi-retirement now. I've managed to get out for a run every day, and that is my main aim nowadays. I just love it. The total variety of terrain and scenery to be had around here. For those that don't know, this is the Swanage and the Jurassic Coast in Dorset, and it's just lovely, just lovely.
It's quite ironic. It's the Jurassic Coast because you are, you don't mind me saying, a running dinosaur. You have a.
I am totally Jurassic. So, Jurassic Crutchlow. It's in the initials. Yeah.
Yeah. There we go. Absolutely. Okay, Julie. So yeah, I've never been down there, but I've heard and seen many pictures of. I'm really jealous of the scenery and the landscapes you get to run on. So can you talk about how you got into running? It's not a simple story, but how did you get into running?
Well, my first sport was cycle racing, actually. And okay. From sort of 14, 15, I got into cycle racing, and I was doing that for about 4 years until I was 18 or so. It was quite, and then it became quite expensive and possibly dangerous as well. And I found myself, I've just gone to university, and the sort of world opened up in terms of a choice of sports. And I was sports officer in the student union there for all 3 years. The position was vacant when I arrived. I applied, got in, and so I got involved with football, hockey, tennis, and cross-country running. Remember I went to a trial for the cross-country team for the running team. They did some road relays at Canterbury, I think it was, in the university and things. Anyway, went to the turned up to the trial in my Dunlop Green Flash, which were my the things there, and won it. I won it. Ran it like a cycle race. I just got into the in the front group, just stuck there, sprinted into the last corner and out of it, and came up to slide first. And that was the beginning. And I was invited to join my one of my history lecturers, Pete Edwards, who was with Epsom at the time. And he invited me to join them training. And I was amazed. On the bike, we were often out for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours. And this running thing, you turn up, you change, you go out, and you warm up, and you do a bit for half an hour or so, go back, shower, and it's all over. It's wonderful. No expense in terms of bicycles and all the rest of it. No dangers. And I took to it, actually. Yes, I did a few cross countries and things like that. And but anyway, all these other sports were there. I was in the football team. I played tennis and did a little bit of hockey and things. And I had an inclination of doing a triathlon because I could swim a bit. And So I looked around, and the local running club was called the Polytechnic Harriers, which were quite a big team in the day. They were coming towards the end of their time then, but yeah, and they some of the old boys there took me under their wing, and I did a few Met leagues and bits like that. No running background, and you imagine, you're 18, 19, you're already sort of fairly sort of developed, but the cycling background that I had in terms of endurance and strength and oxygen uptake, that sort of thing, put me in fairly good stead. And I sort of started out with some, as I say, the cross countries, 10 mile races on the road, and just kicked off with a sort of 52, 53 minutes for the 10 miles, and I think I ran 72 minutes around the Watford half. So just the
It's not a
basic
flat course, yeah.
endurability that I had. Oh yeah, and I did a 2:42 in the Guildford Marathon, sponsored by Fiery Muir at the time. And your invite to this made me look up some of my results, and they're a bit thin at the time, but I can see here 25th of March 83, 2:42:12, and that was probably my first official road race, I suppose.
And you would have been 22, is that right? 21, or
I'd have been 22
oh, that's
then. So
impressive. That's impressive.
I was at the end of university, just about. Some of my results are a bit. I remember I got dragged into the southern leagues and things like that with the Poly, and largely run on cinders and things like that as they were then. I moved to Watford in 84, and then and joined Watford, and started running with them, sort of. And they were doing Chiltern leagues and things like that. So we were very much a road harrier cross country club, and that's really my background. And you look at my PBs, and there are one or two that are okay there. I sort of picked up in the odd open meet or Southern League and things like that. But I was never a trackie, so my PBs as such aren't anything to get overexcited about.
Yeah, so I'm going to come back to your PBs shortly. Just in terms of the cycling background, I guess that I'm guessing you were doing 5 to 6 hours max on a Sunday sometimes, or at least between three and.
That's right. Yeah, but you have to remember this was probably we're probably doing that at 16, 15, 16, 17. And you imagine the sort of endurance that you're building into the body at that formative age, which on hindsight, had I been involved with running, there's no way I'd have developed that sort of
Absolutely.
strength then, because your body would have broken down. Whereas on a bike, your weight supported, it's relatively fluent, and it's bloody. I can remember some really, really hard times, sort of when you're over an hour and a half away from home and you've totally gone, you're bonked. It was pretty dire, but very, very formative in terms of being an athlete.
Yeah, and I think it's funny that I didn't know you were a cyclist. It was talking to this one of our sister podcasts, Richard Francesi. He told me about you doing a lot of cycling in your formative years, and I thought, well, that's a wonderful, wonderful training background. Like as you said, the time that you can get without any of the attrition that you get from running, it's just. And I think you come from, so I went from running, I've dabbled with cycling, nowhere near your level, but I find that the shift from doing, like a 90 minute long run and the equivalent of that on a bike is 3 to 4 hours at least. And it's so much more time consuming. And then like to come from it, from your point of view, where you've got off, this 4 hour ride now is now a one to 1.5 hour run. And you've got so much more free time.
Yes, absolutely.
And in terms of your running at university, so did you start pretty much immediately as you went to uni and then you ran for the whole 3 years?
No, I was as I said, I was involved. I was in the football team. I was
Okay.
in. I turned up to be sort of coach manager as well. I was at the
Oh,
sports
okay.
office there. I was sort of
Okay.
responsible for promoting the thing.
Yeah.
And I ended up sort of getting involved, supporting and filling in teams. So I dabbled in a bit of did a bit of everything, which was marvelous. I
Yeah,
loved it.
yeah. Okay. I'm just curious to that 242, 52, 53 for 50, for 10 miles. So that they are.
That was done on very, very little money.
Yeah. Wow.
Very
Yeah,
little money.
it's
It was
pretty
just
impressive. Yeah.
on what I had in me.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it's just really impressive. I think it does hint at your. Yeah. I think talking to you before we come on to this that you didn't ever overtrain, and I know a lot of your peers would have done big volume, maybe in the three figures mileage wise. Yeah, still impressive performances.
Julian, your career as a senior, it's really impressive, and I think you may have said, and others may say about you've been around a while, quite a while. You've got, if I've got this right, you have 10 senior county titles. So that's Hertfordshire, which is really impressive. And you also have 44 top three Chiltern League places. And for those of the listeners who don't know, the Chiltern League is a league that's run around the Chilterns, Buckinghamshire, Hertfordshire, I'm trying to think now, Bedfordshire. So a lot of the big clubs in that area. And you've achieved, top three places in 44 races. Do you, that clearly shaped your career as a veteran. How did you feel that I mean, that clearly was a good platform for you to build off as a veteran. Can you talk us about your to tell us about your veteran career?
So the absolute foundation to anything that I've really achieved go back to my adolescent days, I suppose, when I was a cyclist. But I mean, that literally shaped the work that you do as you're growing into your adult form, shaped you've literally quite literally your heart and your lung capacity. And the youngsters will sit on their backsides and don't do anything in their teens. Their opportunity's gone. And I was lucky, I suppose, in terms of sport, that I actually went through that period in my life doing a high volume of work. So that really shaped me. I got into the running, moved to Watford in 84, and on and off over the next couple of decades or so, I was running the Chiltern Leagues every winter. And I'm a cross-country runner. People know me as a cross-country runner. So those 10 county wins were in 4 different decades, which is quite amusing.
Okay.
The 44 Cheltenham top places, year in, year out, I'd be racing in there and getting involved with it. And I suppose it was towards the end of my 30s when I started to pick up my running. At the time, the veteran, as they're called then, started at 40, not at 35 for the masters they do now. So in your late 30s, you're starting not to be quite as competitive as you were. And you're looking forward to to when you turn 40, you could compete at a decent level again. And I knew that it was a very high level there. You had the likes of Nigel Gates, Mike Hager, and men's were sort of running really quickly as a tops still. So that motivated me. It was something to aim for again. And I did really work for it. And I can remember sort of really trying to pick it up as I was approaching 40. And it went quite well. My first I did the European road half marathon at the Masters in Malta. Second in that. I was quite happy with that. And then I set about getting in the England team as your friend and colleague Mark Persons. We should be done in the 60s in probably the best of the Masters races in the Hope calendar. That's the British Irish Masters. I'm international for company. For the England team, it's pretty hard to get to be on it. And I can remember training like crazy, and I just wanted to get into the team, to be on it. So I trained really hard for that. I think I was joint fastest in the South of England road relays. And I think that run, a joint fastest with Mike Wallace and Hill, had won a lot of the Masters events up until that point, and got selected. That was great. And I think just after that, they then held the British Masters Cross Country Championship in Swansea. It had been delayed from March because of foot and mouth disease, I think it was. So they held that in. Yeah, I was in Swansea in October, and by that time I was absolutely flying. It was probably possibly one of the best periods of fitness I had ever. And there was a great lineup there in Swansea, all the big names there, and I just ran off the front. I think at one point I was over a minute in the lead.
Oh, wow. This was as a V40.
That was good.
As a V40, still, was it your first?
That was a V40, yeah. Okay. And then I returned from that, and then a week or so later, there was a Chiltern League in the park, in Castlebury Park in Watford, and your friend and I had a bowed up there, and all the others, and I won that as a master. I was going all right then. And then I think Tony Bush, who was coaching you guys in Harrow at the time, he congratulated me and asked. He lived near Castlebury Park.
Yeah.
And he asked if some of your guys could join me on a Saturday session, and that was quite interesting.
Kept you going as well. Okay, so the one thing that you've been really good at, Julian, is peaking for Masters races at the right time. Selecting those when you turn from 40 to 45, 45 to 50. That in itself is quite difficult as a senior athlete, but as a Masters athlete, when you're can you talk us through some of the challenges you faced as a Masters athlete, as an aging athlete, as trying to balance the risk of injury?
You picked on the point that there is a steady, I hate the word decline or deterioration, but you do slow down consistently year on year. I think you can look at the stats on it, and I understand that the deterioration of as it might be called is about 0.7% a year. So across a 5-year age group, you're just not going to be competitive in that horse and fifth year. At least I can't. The two guys that I mentioned before, Nigel Gates and Mike Hayden, could. They were that good. They could be competitive pretty much across all 5 years of their age. Most can't. Some can, the really good ones, but most can't. And you recognise that, and so you put your effort into going to the races, and which involves the travel cost, time, and there's a commitment, and all the rest of it. And you make that, and I've won British titles, some of the international ones, in the first 2 years of each 5-year age group. And then let it go. You can't be on top form all the time, and you've got to let physically get over it, and mentally, emotionally get over the height, the strain of all this thing, and then build up, you know, probably take a year or so out, and then build up in the 18 months or so towards when you turn again. And, you know, I've done that every 5 years.
Yeah, okay. And I, like, going back to when I trained with you or when others trained with you, the quality of your training was pretty high. And how did you manage to balance that commitment to doing? Is that, I mean, I'm assuming that's correct. You did have quite a lot of, like, good quality work in there. You didn't do a lot of big volume, but you tended to do pretty good quality through the week.
Okay, I'm going to take you back to when I was a senior. Mm. When I turned up to Watford, yeah, I did have some pretty quick PBs over short distances at that point. But I started in the children's leagues, and the early children's leagues, I'd have been around the top 10, something like that, possibly creeping inside the top 10 if I had a good race. And then I think it was about 86. One summer, I thought, right, okay, I'm really going to go for it now, and I'm going to really change. And I was going to commit the whole summer to preparing for the next cross-country season, because I'll repeat it, I'm a cross-country runner.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to take the summers off. I didn't really do track. I didn't run other track unless my arm was twisted and I had to fill in. And I used to prepare in the summer for the cross-country season, whereas most people did the cross-country season as their preparation for track. So now it was a bit of a reverse end. But that summer, I really went aboard about sort of changing my running. And I sort of really, I looked at running and I tried to sort of break it down and be a little bit more scientific about it. I was sort of self-coached. I had run a little bit with the route led by Mike Dixon, who might be aware of his early current speed. But I was commuting into London at the time, sort of half an hour and a half each way, and I really didn't have the time to go off and train with guys. Anyway, that summer I did a lot of work to shape myself into a runner. And my motto was that I wanted to get the most out of myself of the little resources, time being the main one, that I had. And so in all my career, most of my work, early days, I was doing about 50 miles a week, which was probably half the volume that's a lot of my competitors were doing, my rivals were doing. But a lot of it was quick. And now when you're young, you get away with it.
Yeah.
But of course, when you turn master, you've got to be a bit more canny with it. So yes, I did. Some of my sessions were really hard, but not all of them by any means. I mean, you've asked me my thoughts on training, the balance of training for a week on a couple of occasions, and you know, it's not rocket science. You just mix your speeds, your energy systems up, and you just do a little bit of that. But if you're going to race hard cross country over 10K or something like that, you've got to do a lot of hard work.
Mm.
You can't jog your way to being in the front of the children's league or the front of the county cross country. You just can't.
Mm.
So there's hard work involved. But you know, the danger is injuries, and we've all had injuries at the time. But the biggest mistake, and this is something I think you'll listen to my do well to think about, is that when you've had any length of time off, even a week, if of inactivity, either through illness or injury or anything, 2 weeks even more so, 3 weeks even more so, you have to start again from where you are, not where you left.
Mm-hmm.
You're starting from where you are. And I quite often had this expression, I need to get fit to train. And so the very first steps that you do, have got to be just that. You know, you've got to start up again. And if you've had, say, let's say, 3 weeks off, you're going to be aching after that, even if after the first jog.
Mm.
And you've just got to get those weeks of just jogging around, slowly letting your legs and the rest of your body get accustomed to the quite tough action of running again before you even start training. And a lot of people don't do that. They don't give the time to let their body adapt to where they are. You know, you've got to be brutally honest and truthful as to where you are. You know, what if you haven't done it in 3 weeks, there's no way you can pick up the book the way you left them. You've got to start again. And that's always been my motto, and I've always managed to do it.
Yeah, I think that the point that you make is a really, really good point, that people think they can just start from where they left off. And I think even more so with running, because for those people, maybe they don't always remember this, that the loading on the tissues, the ligaments and the bones, you know, and the carb, you know, that soft tissue, that is this, that takes a lot longer than the heart and the cardiovascular system to adapt to training. So often what one can go on a bike and maybe take a few more risks. One could go in the gym and do a, you know, up your volume quite quickly. But with running, you've got to, you say, really got to pay attention to that, the loading and that real attritional damage that can happen if you're not careful.
The weakest point that you have as a runner, the weakest link in the chain is your musculoskeletal system.
Absolutely.
You've got to do that first. You brought up a few things, and in terms of training, that you used the word term response, and that is one that I really grew to understand. That each of the training elements that I did would induce, it's the sweat-induced response. It's it's the training effect.
Mm.
So you have the rest, and it'll have a response. And that response time will be different for different parts of the system. And the muscle system takes days and weeks to build up.
Mm.
And you can't rush it. It's not worth trying to load your sort of your cardiac system, your oxygen uptake and the rest of it, if your muscle system's going to break down.
Yeah.
So in all my career, I've always... I've got to take that back, sorry. I can't say always, because when I'm young, I've made mistakes like others, but, you know, I have learned. I really, really have learned. And I think there's a big graduation in terms of level of exercise, from doing nothing to walking, to jogging a bit quicker, to steady running, and there's a lot in there that you can do that will improve the muscle system.
Mm.
You might not feel as if you're working that hard and so on, but you're inducing that positive change in the muscle. So the walking and the jogging, the power walking, when you're really bad to walk, jog, it's all valuable. It's all got to be done.
Yeah, well, thanks. They're really, really good points there that anyone can pay attention to, especially masters runners. I heard, talking to Graham Jones, you may remember, lived in Watford. I think he had a conversation with you a while ago, and he said to me that I'm sure he's not lying, that you had a philosophy that every sort of age group you went up, or maybe every couple of years, that you felt that you had to put in a bit more. You had to up the effort of your training, or is that true?
I don't recall saying that, but then you have to be. I've learned to be cannier. I mean, now my aim is simply to keep moving.
Mm.
I don't have any aims. I've sort of given up traveling to do the national or international event and things like that. My whole aim is to keep moving. I've gained in fitness because we happen to have a local park run that is possibly one of the toughest in the country.
Okay, yeah.
Just running, getting round there is a massive effort, and it's raised my fitness level. But I happened the events, the master scene did inspire me. I mean, at the very introduction of that talk, you asked to give myself a description. So I said, well, yeah, I was a good club runner. Well, okay, 44 top threes in the children's and 10 county. Yeah, said that. But the point is, I wasn't international as a senior, but so I'm not pretending I was anything more than that. But, you know, the top guys, you know, they've worked really hard, they've got what they want, and they're no longer competing, leaving me and others like me near the top of the tree. And that inspired me. And I've got no pretensions about being any better than I am or whatever I've done. And I enjoyed it. And so middle to the end of the age, 5 year age back. So I would eat off, and then I'd pick it up again. So there's a sort of element of truth to that.
Mm.
And each time I pick it up, it's harder work.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and that's perceived effort. I've learned to, as you've got older, you've got to be more intelligent with what you do.
Mm.
I now, I've got no particular aims, but I'll do one quicker run midweek, and I'll do the local park run or something like that on the weekend. So I'll do two higher than average level runs a week, and that's it.
Mm.
The rest of it, I'll do. I mean, it's quite hilly out there, but I'll do. You know, sort of about an hour a day, steady running around the hills and the coastline here, which is just wonderful. And then, you know, it's getting me fit, keeping me fit and healthy, and happy. And
That's still a fair bit of training, though. Good job. So, moving things on, what are your proudest achievements as an athlete? And it's not an easy question.
No, it isn't an easy question, and I it's hard to pick anyone out. I mean, big moments have been. I went back to Helsinki. My natural mother's was finished, and as a better there, and I wanted to go and run in Finland, and I won the Helsinki half at the time, which started and finished in the Olympic Stadium. I went back and did that on a few occasions. I wouldn't say necessarily my most proud achievement, but I mean it's very, very enjoyable. I've won a few titles, the British and the home international. My first home international win in Ballymena was great. I can remember afterwards picking up the I think it was the Yorkshire Regiment just outside of Belfast. And when England won the tea, I was team captain. I left the trophy, the whole place. that was great. But I mean, I would say the proudest bit, I've been out there and I've been near the top of the local club scene for such a long time. I mean, one thing, but it just the fact that I've been out there all this time.
Longevity, yeah. And in terms of like you, who's inspired you to run? It doesn't have to be a runner. Maybe who or?
As a kid, it had to be Lasse Finn.
Okay, the famous Finn, flying Finn.
He was special. But then the that summer when I wanted to reshape myself, the guy that I had in my mind, I was sort of picturing myself on, it was Sal De Wita.
Okay.
He was a running machine. And the balance and it was just wonderful to watch. And I don't know that much about him. I could just remember seeing him float around the track.
He ran barefooted, didn't he? Did he run barefooted?
Sorry?
Did he run barefooted?
Sal De Wita, I don't think so.
No, okay, is that someone else? So that those.
He was after Ovechkin, Elliott. He was a bit after that, and a bit before Gamouche.
Okay. But is there anyone inspired you locally, like to a training partner or not?
The running scene here is interesting. I think COVID, Jane, my partner, and I moved here just before the first of the COVID lockdowns. So I think we went to one club Wednesday evening sort of group thing, and then we were shut out. It's an adult-only club as it is now. Adult-only. In that it, I don't know whether it constitutionally, it just doesn't provide for juniors. And I don't want to be rude about it. It is what it is, and it's great. It's got lots of different groups, but large, I would say, substantially sort of participation.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's nothing wrong with that. It's great. It's got great. I mean, and some of them do absolutely crazy events of 50-mile runs along the south coast, up and down the river. It just beggars belief. But yeah, great. I mean, so it's a lively thing. But I wouldn't say I don't. There's no one here that inspires. I sort of particularly regularly go out training with. I just sort of get up and go out when the sun shines.
You've had a long career journey. You're still running, still doing, you know, more training than most established seniors. What would you do anything differently if you could go back to your early running career?
Not really. It's a pretty short one, possibly not the answer one, but I mean, it's a low question. I think. It's easy to say, well, I could have been better if.
Mm.
But at the time, you make your decision.
Yeah.
So most people are limited by, you know, what the genetics and things like that, and substantially by circumstance. Mm. So early days, I was working in London, hour and a half each way on the trains and buses and what have you. I squeezed the sort of half-hour training run in midweek of an evening and that sort of thing, did a bit on the weekend, and that was my aim in the training at that point was just to get the most out of what I could do.
Mm.
And I actually think I did. So over the years, when I look back, could I have achieved more? Well, doubt it.
Mm. Okay. No, fair enough. I guess, you know, no regrets. You've done what you could in the time you had and had great success. Yeah. So what are your goals going forward, Julian? Do you have any race goals, or is it just tick over?
Bit healthy and happy. Not necessarily in that order. My main aim, when we moved down here, I've had been quite ill, actually, on hindsight. I don't think they actually resolved what it was, but it's affected my kidneys and the like. And I think I had about 9 months where various courses of antibiotics and loads of investigations. And I really felt quite ill. And I felt hungover all the time.
Oh, okay.
And I really wasn't right. It's part of the final decision. Yeah, I just want to move. I've always wanted to retire here on the South Coast, and I thought, okay, well, I'm just going to do it. I didn't know what was around the corner. You know, the conversations could have gone a bit ugly in the consultations. They didn't, and I'm fine. And when you move down here, I thought, right, I'm just going to run every day for a year and then see what 5,000 kilometers or so. Was it 5,000? Yeah. In the first year.
Okay.
About 80,000 meters of elevation.
Okay.
I still do try to keep that more or less. I do vary my runs during the week, so I'll ease off on the sort of Thursday and Friday and really and allow myself to recover a bit. I'll literally just jog along the beach or something like that. But that's my aim, just keep moving, that going, yeah. And enjoy life down here. I'll never say I'll never do any of the main events again, but I've got no plans to do.
Yeah. So that 5,000 kilometres a week, that's nearly 100k a week. So that's pretty good going with the elevation.
That was the first year when we got down here. Yeah. And then last year, then after that, I cut it down a bit. Last year, I think I aimed at, I just prepped over 4,000.
Okay.
So I'm doing about 50 miles a week.
That's good going, yeah, with the elevation.
I'm just getting over, I thought it was a hernia, but it was a stress fracture pelvis.
Oh.
That was found out on a scan. I'm clearing now, but it's literally just this last couple of weeks where I've actually been able to go out pain-free. So I'll pick it up again, but I'll probably look at about another 4,000. A year and just
see what happens.
The local park runs. There's a road race, the Dorset Road Race League, that's got a series of races, which I like because I've gotten to know some of the club runners from the other clubs around locally, Little Down, Bournemouth, Poole, Egdon in Weymouth, and they're all lovely people. I mean, it's nice to go to a race and say hello.
Yeah, have some friendly faces. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right, thanks, Julian. It's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for talking us through your career and giving us insight into the Masters running scene. So thanks again, Julian, and thanks for coming on the show.
Brilliant. Okay, cheers, Dave.
See ya.